What happens in Las Vegas does not stay in Las Vegas. TNT Radio is telling the world and coming to you live from Freedom Fest 2022 at the Mirage with Misty Winston on TNT Radio.
Hello, that is very accurate. What happens in Vegas does not stay in Vegas. It gets broadcast live on TNT Radio. So I am live from Las Vegas at Freedom Fest 2022. It is day three of the event. It has been another amazing day filled with great speakers and breakout sessions and all of that good stuff. And we are bringing it all to you live. We are bringing you as many interviews as we can grab. It's just been a really fantastic event. So we'll have more coming up for you later on tonight at the 6 o'clock Vegas time hour. And then we'll have a couple hours for you tomorrow towards the end of the event. The event ends tomorrow evening, I believe. So thanks so much for tuning in and checking out our Freedom Fest coverage. And joining me now, very excited. We have a very special guest for you. It's Dan McKnight, who is a 13-year combat veteran of the U.S. military, including service in the U.S. Marine Corps Reserves, U.S. Army, and Idaho Army National Guard. And in February 2019, he founded Bring Our Troops Home, which is a national organization of global war on terror veterans who seek to return constitutional war powers. And boy, do we ever need that right now. And an end to our endless wars in the Middle East and Africa, and an America First foreign policy. And Dan took part in a panel yesterday, actually with my friend Kyle Anzalone and Scott Horton, on the problem of NATO and the impact of Ukraine and Russia on foreign policy. And we're very pleased to have him here with us today. Dan, thank you so much for joining me.
You bet. Thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, of course. I'm really excited to talk to you. My friend Kendra, who's been helping me out with the booth yesterday, was making the rounds a couple of days ago and met you. And you came over and signed our tapestry that we have for Julian Assange, which we appreciate. And I was really excited to have you in here because, as I said, this constitutional war power thing, it's insane what's happening right now with our foreign policy. We're everywhere, but there's really been no declaration of war. Your organization is really seeking to bring that kind of responsibility back, right?
That's correct. And the United States has not properly declared war, which is required in the Constitution in Article 1, Section 8, since 1942, when we declared war against Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria. And since that time, Congress has literally castrated themselves and made themselves ineffective in foreign policy and matters of war by allowing the president, whether Republican or Democrat, to take us from a state of peace into a state of war without proper oversight, without proper planning, without a strategy or even a defined mission. And we're trying to reclaim that authority for Congress, and we're doing it through a couple different measures.
Yes. And it's, it is really kind of frustrating and depressing that we've allowed it to get to that point where they are able to enter into these military conflicts without a declaration of war. And you're right, Congress has really neutered themselves, and they've kind of just handed that power away. And it's, what do you think it's going to take to get that back? Because I mean, I've seen multiple different efforts. I know that the Libertarian Institute, Scott Horton, has had a kind of a run on that, especially in particular recently with the Yemen situation. And it feels as if there's really no accountability left.
There really isn't accountability. And we've gotten into this process of an authorization of use of military force instead of a declaration of war. And we're working with Scott and Libertarian Institute and Libertarian Party and some very conservative, liberty-minded Republicans in Congress to try and repeal those AUMFs, which go back to Desert Storm 1, Afghanistan, and Desert Storm 2. And if we could repeal those, we could return ourselves back to a starting point of zero and commit that we'll never send American troops off to war again unless Congress does their job first. But it takes more pressure on DC than we can do as individuals and as a group. And that's why we're fighting in the states, and we're having the states state legislatures fight this fight with us to try and restrain their authority under the 10th Amendment and keep the military, specifically the National Guard, from deploying to war unless Congress has first put their name on the line with a declaration.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really sound strategy, is to go through the states on this first, because as you said, it's difficult to put the amount of pressure that's needed on government as a whole, as an individual, or as these small groups. But if we focus more locally, I think that we're able to make more of an impact. At least we can kind of bounce around from state to state and try to run campaigns to get, people on board with these efforts. And I think that that's, I think it's really important that people, because I think it's really easy to feel kind of defeated and hopeless because there has been this prolonged period of time with no accountability. But I think if we just take a step back and start small, I think that that's a really important thing that we can do to avoid that feeling of like helplessness.
Absolutely. We did just the opposite. We started big. We took 100 veterans when we first started, 100 veterans and some lawmakers back to DC. And we thought, let's just go meet our congressmen and our senators and let's just plead our case and get them to do their job. And we thought we'd be able to affect change. And one of our members sat down in the office of Liz Cheney, you know, the heiress of the war profiteer fortune, yeah. right? And said, under what circumstances would you support bringing the troops home from Afghanistan? And she looked him dead in the eye and said, never. We will wow. never come home from Afghanistan as long as I have anything to do with it. And right then we walked out of that room and we said, Washington, D.C. is lost. The swamp is, you cannot win a constitutional battle in Washington, D.C. K Street advisors, all the military industrial complex, all the contractors, they all live within seconds of the Capitol building. And their influence comes from the biggest buildings, the tallest glass and steel buildings. And the amount of money that they pour into Congress is you can't match it. And so we thought we have to get away from this and we have to change the structure of the battlefield. We have to fight where we can win. And that's why we went back to the states and we created this piece of legislation called Defend the Guard, which takes away half of the military's fighting capability. The National Guard, they're not allowed to deploy to a foreign conflict unless Congress has first put their name on the line before the military puts their boots on the ground.
Yes. And I think that's, I mean, listen, it is insane to me that we are able to send troops into a country without any congressional oversight, without any discussion or debate. There's no conversation. It's just done. It's like a snap of a finger. And there's and again, no accountability. There's no, we aren't even allowed to question it. If you question it, you're seen as unpatriotic.
Yep.
And it's very strange to me. And I was reading on the website where it's usually veterans that are against these kinds of conflicts, obviously, for obvious reasons. They are the ones that have been most directly impacted negatively by these things. And so it's weird, you know, you said you took this group of veterans to DC and you tried to plead your case. And that's when you know it's really bad, yeah. when even a group of veterans can't affect change by just going and pleading the case, because, you know, there's the whole support the veterans, support the troops. We got to listen to them, take care of them. And if they aren't even willing to listen to you, you know, it's gone. It's
absolutely. Really, and we're really tired of the yellow ribbon on a tree, or yes. they're renaming a state highway in the name of a veteran, or giving away free fajitas on Veterans Day. That's not how you honor a veteran. You honor a veteran by stop making more of them that come home in wooden boxes.
Yes.
And that's the key, is if we want America to fight a war, which I'm not completely in a war. I understand. I'm not so naive as to think that America doesn't have interests that must be defended. But we have a mechanism for doing that. And that mechanism is a debate and discussion and approval from Congress, which is made up of the representatives of the people. So if the people approve and sign off on war, then we go to war. Absent of that, no single man or woman, Republican or Democrat or Libertarian, should be able to take our country from a state of peace into a state of war. And that's the problem we have right now.
Yes. I mean, it is the problem that one of many problems that we have right now. But yeah, I mean, it's just really endlessly depressing that we have allowed it to get to the point where they have that level of power, where they can just send our men and women into a battle zone without any oversight or debate or conversation. And that's, you know, it's really frustrating. And the Defend the Guard movement, I think, is a really great, again, taking that step back and kind of, you know, starting more on a micro level, because I think that it is easy to get overwhelmed when you're going up against, you know, the establishment, because they do have such really just unlimited power. They're kind of above the law. There's no accountability. So, I mean, is that kind of the plan now? I know you said you started big. Is that the plan now, just go take it more, yeah. more to local level? And
that is the
smaller?
Plan.
Yeah.
And we've got the American Legion in some states that have endorsed Defend the Guard. We've got state legislatures. We've got the Republican Party of the state of Texas, in Georgia, in Idaho, that have endorsed Defend the Guard. The Libertarian Party as a whole endorses Defend the Guard. We've got Democratic sponsors in Hawaii and Wyoming that are working. So we're attacking this from a bunch of different angles, but as the smallest, most decentralized place that we can. And to that point, we've decided now that we have to take our expertise on the road, and we're going to communities around the country, and we are training activists specifically in Defend the Guard, but it works for all liberty movements, on good tactics, on how to win a campaign, on how to operate inside politics and outside of politics, and how to shape messaging, how to recruit activists. And we're taking this school on the road. It's called our Political Leadership Institute, and it's just getting ready to launch in Kentucky in 2 weeks. And we're really excited about that. But we want a laser focus, no more shotgun blast.
Yeah.
It's now a laser focus.
Yeah. And I love that you're training activists. I'm an activist myself. And I feel like a lot of people don't understand that activism isn't just like, you know, grabbing a poster board and standing on a street, you know, on a sidewalk somewhere. There does need to be a tactical approach to it. There does need to be, you know, some kind of planning and organization, and there are skills involved in doing that thing. So I love the fact that you have, have the idea to really get people engaged and educated on how they can be most effective. Because otherwise you're just kind of, you know, flapping in the wind. You know what I mean? And if you want to really affect change, you need to be strategic when you're out there.
Absolutely. And our first feather in our cap, we just removed our first state legislator in Idaho that opposed Defend the Guard. And part because of redistricting, part because of our efforts, he's gone. And we've got a very good liberty-loving legislator in there that supports our movement. So eventually, you have to make the establishment understand you. You have to make them hear you. Then you have to make them respect you. And ultimately, you have to make them fear you. And
yes,
that's our goal now, is to make them afraid of the movement. Make them afraid to stand up and say, yeah, we're going to send all of your sons and daughters off to war, but not mine, not me.
Yeah.
We have to make them scared and terrified of that. And that's the goal.
Yes. And that's, I'm so glad that you said that, because oftentimes when I say something like that, they need to be afraid of us. People are, you know, they act as like they clutch their pearls as if I've said something terrible. And that's what it's supposed to be. Our government is supposed to be afraid of us. They're supposed to be. That's the only way that we can keep them in control and to keep them from, you know, doing the things that they're doing now. They've been kind of just off the leash for so long that they have no real allegiance to us. They don't care what we say because they don't have to.
That's right. They're beholden to lobbyists and to their own power hungry struggles. And, you know, our government was never meant to be made up of career politicians.
Yes.
And, beyond the career politicians, even worse than that is the career administrative arm of the government. People that stick around from administration to administration that actually write the policies and direct the politicians, tell them where to go. And those folks fear nobody because their jobs are as protected as they can be through the public sector unions and tenure and all the other things that come with it. So as activists, it's important for us to find the fight, find the biggest, the best point of entry and leverage, and then put as much pressure on that point as possible.
Yes. And that is, you know, and I love that the idea that you also focus a lot on the way to tailor your message, because I think that's key. That is so crucial. And I do that with myself in a soundtrack. You have to know your audience when you go to speak to somebody. You have to know who you're talking to, and you have to tailor your message to that person, to that group, to that, whatever it is. And I think a lot of people just think that, oh, I can go and I can say the same thing to everybody. And it doesn't really work that way. You have to know who you're talking to. And I think that that is something that a lot of activists don't really understand or appreciate, that if you are able to kind of read the room, yep, and you know, and figure out how you're best going to be able to touch the people that you're speaking to and get them on board, that's a really crucial skill. You
absolutely
know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's kind of how we started, was understanding our room. And I don't know how much time we have here, but we started in 2005, really, when I was in Afghanistan as part of the Idaho Army National Guard. And we were attached to an active duty military division, the 10th Mountain Division and the 82nd Airborne. And they didn't want us. We were National Guard. We were part-time soldiers. They thought of us as less than. And we couldn't get supplies. And so I thought, I need to reach out and find some help. My men were literally struggling. We couldn't get uniforms, body armor, gloves, goggles, things like that. And so I picked up a satellite phone and I climbed to the top of a mountain in the Pesh River Valley. And I called my governor back home in Idaho. And I said, Governor Risch, this is Sergeant McKnight. I'm one of your soldiers. I'm in Afghanistan. I need your help. And he went on to help us. And within 48 hours, we had the supplies that we needed. And then he went on to become Senator Risch, who is now the chairman of the Senate Committee on Foreign Relations, or was until the Democrats took over the House. And that's what reawoken me to do something. I thought, I went to Jim Risch once, I'm going to go to him again. And I tailored my message to him, and he just flat out lied to us. He said, we're done with nation building, Dan. I understand where you're at. I agree with you. We're done with nation building. And then he went back to Washington, D.C. and voted three times over the next 90 days to extend the wars in Yemen, Afghanistan, and Syria. And that's when we decided it's time to do more. And we're going to put pressure on the weakest point, and we're going to apply pressure until we breach the door.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, putting the pressure on the weakest point, I think, is a really, you have to go, you know, where you can and where you can make the most impact. And I feel like, and that's so frustrating to me, because, and that's so typical really of a politician, you know, it's great that he helped you the first time, but it's so the opportunism, the careerism, the self-protectionism, it's more about pleasing their donors, maintaining their own power and control, you know, keeping their positions. And they've kind of lost the idea that they're supposed to be serving the people.
Right. And that same Senator Risch just 2 weeks ago was in a committee meeting and said that what's going on in Ukraine must go on. And I quote, for a very, very long time. Must go on for a very long time. He couldn't give an explanation why, but he didn't want it to revert back to a Syria type situation. So he'd rather keep American military interests, American dollars, treasure, blood in these foreign countries for the sake of consistency.
Yeah.
And it's just wrong.
It is wrong. And that's, we've heard so many people say that. I have Kyle Anzalone on my show on a regular basis. He's a great foreign policy journalist. And we've been talking about this for a long time because it's been openly discussed. They're not even hiding it anymore. We have to make this thing drag out. It's going to continue for a long time. We have blah, blah, blah. And that is mind blowing to me that they can openly say that so casually, and people aren't up in arms about that. You know, I really thought that the American public was done with war. I really thought that, you know, this is going to be something that now, after 20 years of Afghanistan and that whole failed policy, policy that surely if we enter into something like this again, there's going to be a huge amount of public outcry. And I think it just really speaks to the power of propaganda.
It sure
does.
We
don't see that.
Absolutely. And the George W. Bush mentality, you're either with us or you're against us, is so ingrained in the American psyche now that even video games that are tailored to 2- and 3- and 4-year-olds have American military going into countries and blowing up people with brown skin over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And it's just part of our culture.
It is. And it's really, it's been normalized and glamorized on some level. Yep. I mean, you see like movies like Top Gun just came out. That's used as a propaganda mechanism. And that is, I mean, it is really frustrating. We do have to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with more live from Freedom Fest here on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Trish Wood.
Urban student. Like I said, I heard him speak at the citizens' hearing in Toronto, and I was blown away by what he said. Hi, Urban. How are you?
Good to be with you, Trish. Thanks for having me.
Oh, gosh. I'm so glad you're doing this, because as I said, you know, I didn't really get a chance to talk to you at the hearing. I just listened to your very, very dire presentation, and I haven't forgotten it. So that's why you're on today. Would you please, just for our listeners today, give me a kind of a summary, the gist of your presentation and what we now know the consequences have been of closing schools around the world.
In my humble submission, this is the biggest catastrophe, the biggest human catastrophe of the entire pandemic. What people didn't see is that we had the largest replicated policy and administrative action in global history, and that was the closing of the schools.
Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
This is TNT Radio, where you meet the entire menagerie of mankind
and some who haven't yet been cataloged.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, my friends. We are here live at Freedom Fest in Las Vegas. It is an amazing event, as I keep saying. If you are here, please do come down to booth 536. I'm here. You can't miss us. We have a giant red sign, TNT Radio Live. We're in the back of the room, the exhibitor hall. So please do come say hi if you are in the area. We are joined by Dan McKnight, who is the founder of an amazing group called Bring Our Troops Home, which obviously we need to do. We are in far too many military conflicts, and we have far too many troops in places where they need not be. So I wanted to talk to you because the reason why we were doing this interview is my friend Kendra was walking around and was trying to get you, get people to support Julian Assange. And we have this big tapestry. You came over and signed it. And I know that you said that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks work has been really kind of beneficial, obviously, to the work that you're doing with your organization.
Yep, absolutely. So, you know, part of the document dump was a part called the Afghanistan Journal.
Yes.
And it outlined thousands and thousands, I think 91,000 pages, actually, of testimony from soldiers. Soldiers and diplomats explained that we didn't have a mission, a purpose, or a defined exit strategy in Afghanistan, that we were actually failing in our mission there. And eventually it caused the John Sopko to be assigned as the investigating general for Afghan reconstruction. And he was able to finally produce a series of documents called the Afghanistan Papers that was released and blew the lid off of the lies we've been told there, and that we've never had a real clear strategy, purpose, or role for being there. And it's because of that initial document dump that we have the information now. And we're being told in the documents, his headline is right here. It says, the American people have been constantly lied to. And that was his testimony to Congress when he finally released it.
Yeah. And I mean, as I've said numerous times, that what Julian Assange has done is a really an unbelievable, it's really not, there's no quantification of it. The service that he has provided to humanity. I want to once again remind people that Julian Assange and WikiLeaks have never gotten it wrong. They have a 100% record of accuracy. So being able to kind of give us a peek behind the curtain as like with the Afghanistan strategy and how just unbelievably just rudderless that it was. We had no plan. We had no strategy. And we were, again, lied to so many times. And Julian Assange really has exposed that in a way that is so beneficial. But unfortunately, it seems like nobody really cares that much about. I mean, he's currently being tortured in Belmarsh prison for exactly what he released with the Afghan war journals and the Iraq war logs and the collateral murder video and the Guantanamo files and all of these just bombshell releases. And, you know, what do you think that that says? Because I think that it probably, again, speaks to the power of propaganda that, you know, a journalist, a foreign journalist, is being charged under the U.S. Espionage Act while affording him none of the protections of the First Amendment. He's being literally tortured. And that's not me saying that. That's U.N. Special Rapporteur on Torture saying that in broad daylight. It's not even, they're not hiding it. It's happening in broad daylight. And it seems as if nobody really cares that much.
I think it's not that nobody cares. I think nobody is informed enough to know that they don't care. And that's the problem, is the mainstream media will not cover this except to blast Julian Assange as a traitor to the country. That's the only time you're ever going to see his name mentioned on MSNBC, CBS, Fox. It's just not covered. So that's why it's important for outlets like you and for organizations like myself,
yes,
to go out and spread the word that there is truth out there and the truth is available. Anybody can find it. It just has to be read and it has to be paid attention to. And I think if the American people would finally open their eyes to the lies that we've been fed, they would do something to stop what's happening to Julian Assange in Brussels. Is Brussels ever know where he's at?
No, he's in London. London, in Belmarsh.
That's right.
But yes, and I think that you're right, and you're absolutely, that is absolutely correct. I think the majority of people in the United States don't know what's happening to him because there is a mainstream media blackout, and the people that do know what's happening to him have been grossly misinformed.
Correct.
I mean, we talk about the lies that we're told. There's been a decade plus long smear campaign against Julian Assange that has unfortunately been incredibly effective. A lot of people that I talk to don't like him, but they don't really know why.
Right.
You know what I mean? They can't articulate why they don't like him. It's they've heard some things and Rachel Maddow said, and you know, all of that stuff. And so it's kind of fascinating to me too, because people try to pretend as if he's some partisan actor, especially in 2020. Oh, he helped Russia get Trump elected. But what people don't realize is he's exposed all of them.
Correct.
And a lot of people don't realize that. I mean, the Iraq and Afghanistan, obviously that's George W. Bush, that's the Republicans. In 2016, he exposed the Democratic Party and their ability to rig their primaries. So he's not a partisan actor, and he's exposed not just people in the United States, but governments across the globe, as well as corporations and corporate corruption. So yeah, I think it's just been an invaluable service that he's provided. And I think that you being able to use his work, I think, is a testament to the importance of what he's doing, because it always breaks my heart to think of these young men and women who are serving our country, who are manipulated and lied to and gaslit, and then sent to these countries to do these horrific things, you know, and to what end?
Yeah, that's just it, though. To what end? We don't have a purpose there. The purpose of going to Afghanistan was to avenge 9/11, right? To destroy anybody that attacked us, to destroy the terror training camps, and to kill Osama bin Laden. All of that was done by February of 2002, except for the killing of Osama bin Laden. So you tell us why we're there. I can't figure it out. We built schools and roads and water treatment facilities, and then we would turn our backs, and the next day we'd go back and they'd be turned over to these warlords who 2 years ago were the Taliban leaders, right? And so why we're there, I couldn't tell you. But having our eyes open to the truth through the works of like Julian Assange and through antiwar.com and Scott Horton's book, The Fool's Errand, those type of things need to be instructed in American schools and,
yes,
and on mainstream media. And, parents that truly care about passing on a free society to their children, they should go out and seek this type of information.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that for me, I feel like we can't go anywhere good unless we're dealing with the truth. And Julian Assange, all he's ever done is expose the truth. And so I feel like though there has been kind of a shift in momentum. I don't know if that's wishful thinking on my part, and maybe I'm in my little bubble too much. But we have seen really a growth of support for Julian Assange over the past several years. In particular, I think over the past year, there's been a lot of things that have happened in his case that has exposed the ridiculousness of it.
Correct.
You know, the key witness admitting that he fabricated his testimony in exchange for immunity from from the FBI, the CIA plotting to assassinate him. And I think that at some point, I think there's going to be a shift in consciousness on Julian Assange. We've seen it happen with, whistleblowers. Daniel Ellsberg was initially kind of villainized, and Edward Snowden, of course, was initially villainized. And there is still some of that with Snowden, but I think that he's kind of coming out of it. Same thing with Chelsea Manning. And I think that it would be really cool if we could figure out a way to support our truth tellers in real time.
Absolutely.
Rather than waiting for decades to then revere them.
Yeah, you know, people always say history always gets it right eventually, but yes. History shouldn't have to wait. We live in a day and age of instant information,
yes.
Instant realization, the 2-minute news cycle. So we shouldn't have to wait. And you mentioned Daniel Ellsberg, and he's a big supporter of our organization. We've interviewed him. He's been on our website. He's fantastic. And he's another one of those heroes you have to look at, that he was a pariah when he first came out and became, became known for his opposition. And over time, people look at him and say, you know what? The guy was right. He was right. I don't want to call him a prophet, but he was prophetic in his intelligence and his words. So I agree. We shouldn't have to wait for a long time for that to happen.
Yes. It's really unfortunate. And I think that Julian Assange is probably one of the greatest minds that we've ever seen and really revolutionized journalism. Again, 100% record of accuracy. Name me another outlet with that kind of record. It doesn't exist. So it would be really great if we could figure out a way as a society to recognize our truth tellers in real time and support them in real time, because they are always demonized. Because powerful people don't like their secrets exposed. So of course, they're going to go after those people. And that includes smear campaigns, which will, solely our opinions of those people. We need to learn to look past that and support those people in real time. So thank you. Seriously, thank you so much for taking the time to come over here and talk to me. Thank you for your work with your organization. Thank you for signing our tapestry for Julian Assange. I would love to speak with you again. So we'll get that set up at some point. And everybody hang tight. There's more coming up for you right after this quick news break here on TNT Radio.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Poland will purchase 116 used M1 Abrams main battle tanks from the U.S. in order to backfill the armored vehicles it had delivered to Ukraine. Hungary's military plans on how to protect ethnic Hungarians living in western Ukraine. The European Union is considering rationing gas across the bloc in the hopes of fighting shortages this winter, with the public being told to expect a tripling of prices.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction.
Misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio. Freedom of speech. Freedom of movement. Freedom of choice. Freedom of assembly. Freedom of health. Our freedom. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is day 3 of Freedom Fest here in Las Vegas. Another fantastic day. Lots of action going on. The exhibitor hall is actually starting to really kick up. It was a little quiet earlier today, but we're starting to get some people milling about in here. So we've been live all week long, bringing you the action, trying to get as many interviews with some really fascinating voices. So make sure you're tuning in. We're going to have more coming out for you at the 6 o'clock hour. And then we will have, I believe, a 2-hour session with multiple interviews tomorrow, I think, starting AM Pacific. So make sure you tune in for that. Don't forget, you don't TNT around in your pocket. It's good family fun for everyone. Okay, so we are joined now by Brian McWilliam. McWilliam or McWilliams?
McWilliams. Okay. Yeah, like a plural.
Okay, just want to make sure. So he's the co-founder of the Lions of Liberty podcast. His passion and concern for liberty began, as did many others, with the Ron Paul run of 2008. And he's also the host and producer of Mean Age Daydream, which is the Lions of Liberty Network's weekly Wednesday look at current events, culture, and comedy. He's a stand-up comedian, actually, which is always a good time. He's moderating a panel tonight. Yes, tonight.
No, it's going to be tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow. Tomorrow at 11 a.m. Yeah. So that's going to be on mastering the language of liberty, refining your message, which I love that, because I find language fascinating and kind of tailoring your message. So that's a great panel to be moderating. So thank you so much. I know you had some flight troubles. Thanks for making it in. I really appreciate you taking the time.
No, by all means. I'm glad I was able to hoof it on over here. And fortunately in Vegas, it's like you can get out, get the taxi, get over quick. So it was no problem. But it's one of those funny things that you're talking about. There's just so many flight issues right now. and everybody's playing the blame game, whether it's the airline traffic controllers are to blame. And again, how many people are out because of COVID vaccinations, refusal to do so? We know the airlines have tried to put mandates in place. So there's many, many questions and not many answers that are coming coming through in a meaningful fashion. But yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks so much.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I mean, I know how it can be a little stressful and trying to rush around. So, I mean, I know you literally just got in. So
I know. I threw my bag behind the booth here and here I am in all my glory.
So, as I mentioned, the language of liberty and refining your message. I love that that's something that you're talking about. I find language fascinating. I don't know if you're familiar with Danny Scherzin. Military veteran, but he's been on my other show so many times. People make fun of me because we used to constantly have him on our show. But he talks about language a lot, and I think that that's a really important aspect of things that I don't think that a lot of people clue in on. That it's important how you deliver your message and also how you tailor your message.
Right, correct. Well, it's also, so my background is also, as you said, I mentioned I've done stand-up comedy for a while in Los Angeles, but I also have 20 years of public relations experience. So when I talk about communicating and how language is vital and how we're communicating the message, kind of forward the cause or whatever you're trying to describe, I'm coming from a position of really knowing what I'm talking about in that regard. And the problem I see so often with so many libertarian or GOP topics is that we're not necessarily communicating what the benefits are in a fashion that people can associate with, they can make personal, that impacts their lives. Instead, we tend to go after things in this kind of broad-based fashion, or it comes across as more, whining about something that's a current problem, but not providing a distinct solution, just saying tear it all down, right? Which to most people is terrifying.
Yeah.
And it's not going to get them to convert themselves in any way. So redefining how we describe things to get a little bit more of an inspirational message, I think, is a key if we actually want to move the ball forward.
For sure. I think you have to be very careful about how you discuss things with people, because you're right. It can be a lot of the things that we're dealing with can be really terrifying to people, because we are facing a lot of really significant issues. And they're all very complex. So I think knowing how to refine your message, and also I think tailoring your message and knowing your audience. Mm-hmm. I do that a lot with the Assange stuff that I do, because I talk to everybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care what party you belong to, who you voted for. I do not care. And I think that that's a really critical thing, is knowing who you're talking to and being able to figure out how you can make it matter to them on a personal level.
Precisely. And you see that, there are so many opportunities just because the world has become in such a terrible situation across pretty much all fronts. We're seeing the moves made to combat, let's say, CRT and pushing critical race theory in schools, or just combating lockdowns. I mean, teachers unions is a way we can look at messaging to say, look, we've been telling the dangers of having crony capitalism, of unions and backing of politicians that are pushing one cause to the detriment of personal choice and personal liberty.
Yeah.
And you're seeing that play out in Virginia. You're seeing that across the board. We look at polling just in the differences between Democrats and Republicans.
Yes.
And how the increase of like 10% in these suburban areas where parents feel threatened. So there's so much opportunity when we have hit almost rock bottom insofar as government controlling these different, from education to healthcare to your business, to your savings account.
Yeah.
The opportunities exist in a plethora of ways, but we have to tell people ways, as you said, not to scare them, but to show them that there's a better path forward and we can take you there. Here's, I kind of like the shining city on a hill concept.
Yeah.
The base messaging that works most effectively is like the Obama style, yes, we can. What does it mean?
Right.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing. But it's giving somebody something to believe in.
Right.
As from a liberty perspective, saying, yes, we can make your life better in these five different ways, and giving something concrete to believe in, that there's going to say, okay, I can get excited about this, almost like a religious fervor, is going to change people's minds more effectively than pointing out that the system's broken. Because when people are down in a pit, the last thing they want to hear is how they got into a pit in detailed fashion and are saying, well, we told you not to fall in the pit.
Right. No, you need to give somebody an idea of how to build the ladder to get out of the pit,
exactly.
Not tell them how they got there. Right. I think that that's a really great point. And you mentioned the lockdowns and stuff, and I want to talk about how, because I feel like COVID has been, obviously a very interesting time to live in, but I think it's been really interesting to see how the concept of liberty has been affected and impacted by the COVID situation, because we see it's honestly been very terrifying to me. I had no idea that the streak of authoritarianism in this country was so pervasive. And that's really terrifying to me.
Yeah. You would never have thought that in America, land of the free, home of the brave, people would just voluntarily be rolling over, and not just voluntarily, but also pointing out, shaming neighbors, encouraging reporting, making sure that everybody gets called out. It's kind of like the pod people in I'm blanking on the name of the movie, but you know, it's like it, screeching at people if they don't see them wearing a mask and, and absolutely locking in step with their neighbors. And that, though, I think is going to have a little bit of a counter to it insofar as how we see the next generation coming up.
Yeah.
Because a generation now, people, you know, think about this and, you know, this white pill and black pill. How do you view the world coming out of COVID? Some people think it's going to continue. The authoritarianism streak is so terrifying. But for me, I look at it and I go, I think people got pushed too far this time. And I also think that children coming up, teens, people that are coming into college, that got their lives displaced, that had their play dates moved, that couldn't go to school, that, you know, the failout rate's 50%, that feel that they were literally had their lives removed and taken away from them, will now rebel, not just against COVID and authoritarianism, but also because the dominant culture right now is so left-wing, is so left-leaning and progressive, from entertainment through to news media and reporting, that these people are seeing we've been lied to. And now the rebellion against the popular culture, the counterculture, is in fact going to be embracing liberty, personal choice, and freedom. So that's what I'm really excited
about. Yeah, no, and I think that's, I mean, that's a very, I'm usually a cynic, so that's a very nice, positive way to look at it.
I usually am.
So that's a very positive outlook to have, and I appreciate that, because it is easy to be become kind of overwhelmed by everything that we've been facing and seeing, as I said, authoritarianism, and that some people really wanted to have people, you know, control everything that they do. I had no idea it was this pervasive, but I do. You're right. It is kind of an opportunity that we can take to move forward towards a more liberty minded and personal choice minded kind of society. So we have to take a quick break. Everybody hang tight. We're going to be right back with more right here on TNT Radio.
Do you enjoy driving your car? Well, don't get used to it, because climate envoy John Kerry says electric cars are only going to be allowed by 2035.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Yes, climate envoy John Kerry is now saying that we'll have zero emission electricity and only be producing electric cars. Here he is.
President Biden has made a very significant commitment for the United States to be, first of all, power sector carbon free by 2035. By 2035, to only be producing electric vehicles in the United States, which General Motors and Ford and others manufacturing have bought into.
So the U.S. will only be producing electric cars by decree of the Biden administration. The World Bank is all in on this. They're going to be cutting off funding for the gas-powered car. But that's not all, because the U.K. Transport Secretary has already announced that owning a car is outdated 20th century thinking. So they're going for your engine, and next, they're going for car ownership in general. Beware. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
I was drawn to the Navy by my sense of adventure. I'm a writer, so if it's the crew's job to look after the ship, then it's my job to look after the crew. It's pretty amazing. Being in charge of pay and allowances is really important, and I love it because they're incredible people. And helping them with personal matters, you really see the positive effect of what you do. There's nothing more rewarding than that. I was born in Beckenham, but I was made in the Royal Navy. Start your journey. Search Made in the Royal Navy.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
George Soros has supported the election of numerous left-wing DA candidates. Since 2016, when Soros first began to back the campaigns of district attorneys, Capital Research Center researchers have tracked more than $29 million in funding from Soros through political action committees, PACs, formed specifically to back left-wing DA candidates. In total, Soros's cash has generously supported over 20 individual candidates, many of whom won their elections and remain in office. They include Diana Becton, Contra Costa County, California. Becton was one of the first in the position to have no prior experience as a prosecutor. During Becton's first years in office, four Contra Costa cities made the list of the top 100 most dangerous cities in California in 2018, and both violent crime and property crime increased in 2019. Soros has spent a combined $6 million on California DA races, much of it wasted on failed candidates. But almost half was spent on the successful campaign of George Gascon from Los Angeles DA. Since the election, Gascon's implementation of left-wing policies led to a crime wave with soaring homicide rates and increased shoplifting sprees. Kim Fox, Cook County, Chicago, Illinois, who's known for her 2019 decision to drop charges against Jussie Smollett for his infamous hate crime hoax, has made headlines for presiding over Chicago's largest spike in homicides in more than 30 years, while her office dropped charges against 30% of felony defendants during 2020.
Don't want the government to know what you're buying? Use cash. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, my friends, we are back live at Freedom Fest. This is TNT Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have been here all week long bringing you coverage of all of the festivities, some amazing speakers and breakout sessions and exhibitors, all kinds of cool stuff. We're going to be back tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific. Sorry, I'm an Eastern girl, so it's hard for me to remember that I'm in a different time zone. So yeah, we'll be back tonight at 6 p.m. and I think we're going to be 8 to 10 Pacific tomorrow, bringing you some more interviews and updates about what the goings on here at Freedom Fest 2022. It's been a great event so far. We are joined today by Brian McWilliams, and we are talking about discussing the kind of COVID impacts on personal freedoms and liberties and all of that stuff. And it's been I think that the biggest thing for me that was the most disheartening was the lockdowns. You talked about the kids. I have kids. I watched how that impacted them. And I don't think we're going to really know the implications of that for years to come. And it's really scary to me, the devastating impacts that that's had on our kids.
Oh, of course. I mean, you look at, so there are some studies that are coming out showing that a little bit of, you know, putting together speech, the ability to speak, ability to communicate. But you think about just beyond that, how much do we learn from human interaction and just facial expression?
Yes.
And your half your face is covered up. And my daughter's in daycare right now. They're remasking up in Los Angeles where I live, which is horrible. So you see that detriment to their very health. And you do have to wonder, I mean, we're not going to know this for 5-10 years, maybe, but I think you're going to see a lot of cognitive disabilities that are going to be coming out of this, because they're especially when at an age of high development. When these kids need to learn, they're looking at everything around them, and you're being denied a basic building block of how your brain develops and how you learn to communicate. So yeah, I mean, it's absolutely tragic.
And then
on top of that, you know, in the older kids as well, part of me, as I was saying, I look at the younger generation, I think that they're going to come around to being more freedom, more personal responsibility. But at the same time, in Los Angeles and some other cities, these kids have been legitimately brainwashed. I mean, I see kids walking outside wearing masks all the time, you know, and it's 85 degrees in Los Angeles. They're by themselves. There's no reason for them to be living their lives like this when they're at virtually no danger.
Right.
But yet they're walking around. They've been so brainwashed by the system, by the teachers, by the government to believe in this fear, essentially fear porn.
Yes.
That now, how is that going to impact how they go about their daily lives when they do get another illness, when anything comes up? Is this going to be a quote unquote trigger warning every time that any sickness comes out? Are they going to start losing their minds and masking up? And we're going to see, again, this a perpetuation of a system which we know has failed, number one, to control anything.
Yes.
And number two is causing psychological damage.
Yeah, psychological damage. You mentioned speech and language. I have a child who's on the autism spectrum, and I've spoken to speech and language pathologists, and that we're already seeing the devastating effects of that. The language impacts are going to be just unbelievable. And it's really frustrating to me to see, as you said, as somebody who's studies propaganda, I'm kind of obsessive about it. I get it, because fear is a very powerful manipulator, and that has 100% been weaponized against us in this situation. And I think that a lot of people are silently starting to question it, but I think a lot of people don't want to vocalize that because they feel stupid for having been duped. And I don't want them to feel stupid. You know what I mean?
I've been talking about that same concept of basically doubling down. It's almost at this point, people had put so much on the line.
Yes.
Like, imagine if you were a huge pro-lockdown advocate and you said, okay, you have to close your business. You're reporting people to the cops for opening up and trying to run their businesses, right? Yeah. And you ruin lives.
Yeah.
I mean, you are, without a doubt, if you're one of these advocates, you ruin people's lives. We know 30% of businesses went out of business over the lockdowns. So how do you equate that? How does your ego live with that? How do you look yourself in the mirror? And to your point, when the truth comes out, you're going to cling to any scrap of that lie, because you are now a bad person. I call it the bad person theory. And I think a lot of people out there cannot handle being bad people.
Yeah.
So they will perpetuate the lie. They'll push this narrative, and they will believe whatever is going to keep them on the side of right.
And you know what's funny is, if you initially did that, It's not great. Don't get me wrong. It's not great that you did that, but I don't see you as a bad person because, again, I understand propaganda. It's very powerful. Fear is a very powerful manipulator. I get that it was probably, it was easy for you to be taken in by that kind of hysteria. But if you now know the truth and you continue to, that now you're a bad person.
Right. Exactly.
Now
you are. And I don't know about you. I've been having fights on social media. As I mentioned, Los Angeles is putting mask mandates back into place, which I have loudly protested.
Yes.
I protested it physically with the Los Angeles Libertarian Party in LA and on social media. I'm currently in a flame war on my Facebook wall because of saying, you know, it's time to stop complying with this. Because at best, people have been sharing this mask study. They said it's the largest. It was in India and Bangladesh. And they're saying it was a success. We proved that masks work. But if you actually read the study, it shows that cloth masks, which are the ones that are actually widely used by virtually everybody, because they're not making people wear K95 masks, those 5%, maybe, that's the reduction rate. And this is what every study's found, but people are trying to convince us that you have to mask up, that you have to cover this face, that we have to continue to deprive children of contact and understanding for 5% increase in efficiency or a 5% reduction in transmission.
Right.
It's absurd.
It is absurd. It is completely absurd. And the idea that we're still doing this 2 years later after everything that we've learned and everything. And what's really frustrating to me is that it has been exposed numerous times that we have been lied to throughout this thing. I mean, how many times has Fauci been caught lying? I mean, I get it. He's the science. He is the science. But I mean, seriously, I don't understand how we can still be at this level in 2022 where we have been lied to and it's been exposed. It's been proven that this has all been nonsense. And all of this stuff has been so arbitrary. Mm-hmm. I talk about it all the time. The idea that AOC can go to the Met Gala and be fine, but all the servants are wearing masks. And that's okay with you? One of the first things, because when COVID first hit, I was skeptical, but I was like, okay, well, we'll see what happens here. One of the first things that I was just like, nope, we're done. It was an NFL game. And so there's the grown men playing a full contact sport for 3 hours, spit flying, trash talking, sweat going everywhere. And that was okay. But they go to the locker rooms and the winning team was celebrating without masks and they got a fine for that.
Yeah.
That makes no sense.
No, none of it's made any sense from the get-go.
No.
I mean, even the social distancing made no sense, was based in nothing. There was, you know, this is the first time they're testing it out. Even lockdowns, you know, really have no scientific basis behind us. Even the masking.
Yeah.
Masking at best, they've used it in SARS, other countries that did it. Primarily, if you're sick, you put one on to prevent transmission. But they don't make anybody that's not sick wear them. It's never been tested in this wide fashion. And yeah, it's none of it's made any lick of sense.
No.
You got to love seeing politicians fly around and go on vacation to Florida, AOC included, vacation in Florida with no mask and then going home and yelling at people in their home state to mask up and get boosted out. Yes. But also now we're seeing just, you know, the transmission rates between COVID and also hospitalization rates for people that are higher booster that have been getting, that have been following the government narrative, are now more at risk than people that haven't. And yet you still see people saying, go get vax, go get boosted. I mean, at what point has the government done a misdeed? At what point is the government going to be accused of, or can we now go after the government and sue them for causing harm to people?
Yes. Yes. And they have caused harm. Like, this isn't just like a little thing. It's not like a little whoopsie. This is a monumental amount of damage that has been caused over the past 2.5 years. And there's never going to be any accountability for this ever. There's never going to be any accountability. Fauci's never going to go to jail. He should. Mm-hmm. Fauci should go to jail. A lot of people should go to jail. That's never going to happen because we live in a situation where they've created an environment where they're above the law and there really is no recourse for us. And I don't know how to change that.
I think that the way to change it is that, as I was talking about, I think that changing how we are describing what the future we want is going to look like. Like, for example, if we want more government accountability, I was using Hunter Biden actually as an example of this, of government accountability and how government overreach, giving government this power, even in moments of fear, is so misguided. It always works out badly and it's hard to get back. But my point about Hunter was that you've got Joe Biden out there. And I don't know, you know, I personally think he's unfit to be president.
Yes.
He's definitely senile. Yes. But he's got this son who is, you know, a crack smoking, lunatic who has been paid an exorbitant amount of money to do jobs he's not qualified for. And yet I guarantee you, and we know for a fact, he's not an outlier in this system.
No.
And he's got this relative that's, you know, he's, you know, Hunter Biden is an example of basically the types of people that you will find in government. And people fall into this fallacy of presuming that government is, you know, is always looking out for the best good, that it has no self-interest. And you see it laid bare.
Yes.
I described Hunter as the hero that we need. He is the hero that Gotham deserves right now because he might bring down the evil empire.
Yeah, that's
showcasing
true.
All these people in government are no better than you and I. In fact, they're probably far worse.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. They are far worse. These are, I mean, honestly, I say it all the time. We're ruled by psychopaths. I don't think that's hyperbolic. We are controlled by psychopaths. These are really terrible people who do really terrible things for their own personal benefit. I don't think there's any question about that. And COVID is a great example of that. Mm-hmm. They have used this as a massive and monumental upward transfer of wealth. They've destroyed small businesses. It has been completely devastating for everybody except for the top 1% or whatever. They've used this as a huge power grab.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, unbelievable power grab. We have lost so many civil liberties throughout the course of this thing. And I don't know how to get people to understand. Once you lose these things, you do not get them back.
Right.
Yeah. Never get them back.
No, people don't seem to grasp that. And you look at the number of examples we have throughout history that people, you know, we look at the domestic spying apparatus, right? That's one great example from the Patriot Act. It was exposed under Obama. Of course, people will tell you had no scandals. It's still in place to this day.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's been ratified and pushed through different varieties. They changed the name. It's kind of like we're in Vegas. They changed the name of the casino, right? To keep people guessing. Well, that's all they're doing with these spying things.
Right.
But the point I think we can change people's minds on is that it doesn't have to be this way. We can, in fact, change the culture to demand that the government be held accountable. We can, in fact, change the way in which we view government operatives and make sure that we hold them accountable for the actions, so we can shorten the length of time that they're eligible to be in the office.
Yes.
We can make sure, I mean, there are cultures that have existed, different political spectrums, that have one term and one term only.
Yeah. Now,
typically, because governments always exist to expand their power, they fight back against that and they try to make it longer and longer. But pushing for shorter term limits, pushing for more accountability, pushing for these people to not be able to get away with, you know, insider trading, Pelosi
yes,
style.
Jesus. Yeah.
It has to be something where we impact the culture and the culture holds them accountable, because right now there isn't a political appetite for it because people want to be on the winning side.
Yes.
No one is to be seen as, you know, whining or whinging. They want their people that they like to win because it means so much to them and their ego to be right, especially with social media now.
Yes.
You wear your causes on your sleeve. So we have to break people's dependence on that winning mentality of always having to be right and tell them it's less important to be right. And it's more important to be accountable and hold people accountable for their actions for the greater good. You talk about societal good. Well, societal good starts with personal responsibility, changing the way you view the world and how you expect people to respond in that world in accordance to your viewpoints.
Yes.
And if we can get people to accept that and stop looking to outwardly for policing, but for acceptance, for verification and validation in their lives, and find that they themselves can lead the way, then we're going to find that the culture is going to start to change. And I think with COVID, we have the best opportunity to do that.
Yes.
Because they've been led astray by all these institutions that they turned to and said, show me the way. I'll follow the experts. I'll follow the science and expand government.
Yes. And I think that that's true. I think that COVID has been, as horrific as it has been, it has presented, I think, a slap in the face to a lot of people who previously had kind of this blanket and blind support and trust in governmental institutions and all of those things. And I think that this has really been a very eye-opening experience for a lot of people. I do think a lot of those people are still silent. I think they're afraid to speak out. I think that there is kind of a silent majority of people who are now starting to get it. And we just need those people to have the courage to speak out against it. And I think also, something else that we have a really, it's bad in this country is this team mentality. Mm-hmm. I despise it. I hate it. I don't like labels. I don't want to be part of your team. I don't care who you voted for. I don't care what party you belong to. If we have a common cause, if we believe in the same thing, if we want to fight for the same thing, then let's do that. Let's come together where we can and figure it out. It's a mind blowing thing I get in trouble all the time because I'm, lumped in with the left and I'm here. I'll get in trouble for being here. I'll get in trouble for talking to you. I'm in trouble for being friends with Reed Coverdale. I get in trouble for that stuff all the time. And that is a very pervasive mentality in this country on both sides. Both sides do it. Reed gets in trouble for talking to me. So it's a both sides
thing.
Big
shout out to Reed, by the way.
I love
he's sleeping
him.
On the floor of my hotel room tomorrow night. I'm not even joking. He's sharing a bed with me tomorrow.
He's fantastic. But there really is this kind of team mentality. And I think people, it becomes part of their personality. And so if you question their team or their leaders or whatever, it's like a personal attack. And that's really weird to me, and I don't know why that is. And we need people to start, looking outside of that.
Yeah, 100%. Well, it's also, we talked about propaganda, circling back around to that again. It's also the reputable sources. This phrase comes up constantly where if you challenge the narrative, people say, well, show me a reputable source that I can
trust. What does that even mean?
Well, what it means is they don't want to read anything they don't agree with.
Right.
Because a reputable source is anything they already read and agree with, and they view as it's basically the media that they view as their mindset.
Right.
So how are you going to find something that goes contrary to what they already are reading in that very publication to provide a reputable source? It's just, it's ridiculous on its face.
It is.
But, the same people talking about the team mentality, lumping it in, everybody wears, getting it out there and taking everything so personally as an attack. That, again, I have to blame social media. I know everybody does it, but I do believe 100% that if social media wasn't as prevalent, if people had more in conversation, just in person conversations, instead of posting their opinions on social media and then fighting in small characters where, again, how many times do you actually have a legitimate conversation on
and
social media?
And 260 characters? Right. Never. Never. You can't.
And you check out, you mute people, and you tune out because it's exhausting to type out in these short form conversations anyway.
Yeah.
So people wear the cause on their sleeve, and then social media disamplifies it and makes it so that you can filter out any opinion you don't like. So again, I hate to blame it because it is the easiest one to blame, but
I think it's part of it though. I think that's a reasonable argument to be made. And I think that you're right. I think that it is, there's no nuance on Twitter. There's no nuance on Facebook. It's very difficult to have. These are not, cut and dry issues. There's a lot, it's complex. These are complex issues. It requires more than 260 characters or whatever it is that they allow you. I think so. That's why I like events like this. We're able to meet in the same physical space and have conversations about things that we care about. And we don't always have to disagree. I don't know why that's controversial. You don't have to agree. I don't agree with myself all the time. It's fine to disagree. You can still work together. It's called being a grown up. So Brian, thank you so much for taking time. I know, again, you just got in and you had to rush over here to join us for this. So I really appreciate you taking the time to do that. And I hope you enjoy your Freedom Fest experience. Good luck at your speech tomorrow. Again, if you are in Vegas at Freedom Fest, 11 a.m., he's going to be on the Mastering the Language of Liberty, Refining Your Message panel. So do please go and check that out. And stop by booth 536. I'm over here. I'm hanging out. I'm chilling. And I would love to meet you. So, but don't go anywhere. There's more coming up for you right after this here on TNT Radio.